Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Indulge in holiday cravings with the nutrition you need from Kachava's All-in-One Whole Body Shake. It's 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Savor the season knowing you're getting the good stuff your body craves. With Kachava, you're getting the highest quality ingredients. No fillers, no nonsense. Holiday nutrition has never been this easy or delicious. Go to Kachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, and use code NEWS for 15% off.
Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. It is a Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. It is time for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. I'm Travis Ryer, joined by my great friend and longtime college football analyst, Mr. Brent Beard. Brent, we're going to get into previewing these first round CFP games involving SEC teams. But if you've watched the program before, which I'm sure you have, if you haven't, welcome. Welcome to the channel. Welcome to Second Helping. Brent is a longtime voter for the Heisman Trophy, and it's certainly been an interesting few days where this year's award is concerned. Shameful in a lot of ways that it hasn't been as much about the winner and Fernando Mendoza than it's been about Diego Pavia. But that's sort of where we found ourselves, especially with some of the, just not a good look from Diego in the aftermath of his finish. We said last week, we talked to you about your ballot, kind of how you voted. And then I want to ask you in retrospect, based on how you voted, we heard Reese Davis say he'd like to take his ballot back. After Pavia's behavior up in New York City. How did you vote, Brent? You can tell us now. You're not sworn to secrecy anymore. Tell us how that played out for you.
And I'll be honest with you. I've always thought, Trav, that we ought to be able to talk about who we vote for the week coming up before we actually have it announced. We used to be able to do that. Cannot do that anymore. To me, it would give the award some more notoriety than if the voters could talk about why and who they voted for, because the trouble is after it's over, it kind of it loses some of the momentum. But I voted for Fernando Mendoza of Indiana. Then number two was Diego Pavia of Vanderbilt, as we talked about. And number three was Jeremiah Love. Now they had four there, Julian Singh. And I can tell you right now, Trav, Julian Singh, I don't think that'll be his only trip up there, as talented as he is. But my did you think that you and I would live long enough to see the winner for the Heisman be from Indiana and the second place guy be from Vanderbilt?
No, it didn't. And it was surreal in a lot of ways. And again, unfortunately, Mendoza, by the way, the acceptance speech and especially the tribute to his mother and and everything that goes with that was an all-timer. Good on him. First class. And I think in retrospect, kudos to you, because you're not in the same position as maybe some other voters after what we saw from Diego up there. And I'm a Diego fan. We've been on the Diego train since he was still at New Mexico State. On this program. But I think even if you're Clark Lee at this point, certainly if you're higher ups at Vanderbilt, you may not be all that upset that relationship is coming to a close. And that's saying that with the understanding Diego Pavia needs to be recognized on a consistent basis for what he helped spearhead there with Vanderbilt. And I'm sure with Clark Lee publicly, it's going to be a lot of flowers to Diego because Clark Lee's benefited as much as anyone from Diego and that NMSU migration coming east like it did. But probably a good getting off point at this point for Diego, especially with, you know, what they've been able to do on the recruiting trail with Curtis being a byproduct, you'd have to say, of the success that, again, even Diego deserves credit for that. But after the events of Gotham and maybe even the lead up to that, and not just with Diego, you know, family, some of those issues that have cropped up with his brother or brothers. This probably isn't the worst, you know, but before it takes on, you know, a stain that really detracts from all the good that Diego did for that program the last couple of years.
And we'll never know this, but I'd be curious how much of his, Diego did apologize for it at some point. But I wonder how much of that trial that Clark Lee had to do with to make him aware of that. Lee has been exemplary, frankly, in a lot of ways. They probably really should have got the playoffs. But Clark Lee, to his credit, said, look, we did it to ourselves. He may have done the same thing or threatened to with Diego.
Well, there's money involved now too.
Yeah,
I mean, sure Diego's got deals. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys have representation.
Sure they do.
To your point in previous years, maybe a coach or something. Maybe it was. Maybe it's Jerry Kill. Coach at Mexico State that's at Vanderbilt now. Who knows? But it also might have been, you know, we've got some deals that are kind of contingent on behavior.
Yes.
And, you know, how you represent those folks. So who knows? But you're right. There was an apology issued. So that was a good thing to see. But on to more pressing issues, Brent, as we've got college football playoff action starting tomorrow night in Norman, Oklahoma, where the Alabama Crimson Tide will take on the 8th-ranked Oklahoma Sooners. It's an 8-9 matchup. What we're going to do, though, we're going to work our way back to that marquee matchup. So what we'll do is start Saturday with that middle game of the three. This one in Oxford, Mississippi, the Ole Miss Rebels, 17.5 point favorites over visiting Tulane. This, like Alabama, Oklahoma, a rematch in its own right. This could have been an all interim situation, I guess.
Yeah,
although
really,
we certainly understand from the Tulane perspective, John Summerall coaching, Lane Kiffin, of course, off to LSU. Silver lining with that is that Ole Miss does have pretty much its offensive brain trust, Sands Lane, for this college football playoff run. This line was 16.5 a week ago in favor of Ole Miss when we got together. Brent, it has ticked up now to Ole Miss minus 17.5. We're also going to take into account some of the player availability reports too, because those are updated or have been updated tonight at 8:10 p.m. And some interesting names from the Ole Miss perspective. Daquan Wright, the dynamic tight end, listed as probable. Antonio Kite, one of the corners for Ole Miss, listed as questionable. And also for Tulane, a very important part of the passing attack for the Green Wave, Bryce Bohannon, listed as questionable for the Green Wave. Your thoughts on this matchup? Are you anticipating something along the lines that we saw earlier in the season when Ole Miss pretty much handled Tulane 45-10 in Oxford? Or do you think Tulane has a chance to make this one at least somewhat competitive?
Hopefully they will for the TV ratings and all that goes along with it. The thing that really got my attention about this game being in Oxford, Trav, they're speculating that this one playoff game will give the city of Oxford $74 million.
Yeah.
And you can see why teams really want to see games played at home.
And that's just in bourbon sales, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, and some people think you're kidding. I know you're not, because of what it might be. By the way, speaking of money, Trav, we understand now Pete Golding in taking over as head coach, $6.8 million next year as a head coach of the Rebels. I'm sure he didn't struggle as defensive coordinator of the Rebels, but being the head coach brings in a little bit more cash, does it not?
Yeah, that'll spend pretty well down on the square.
Yeah, sure will.
You know, if you want to go out, maybe go to City Grocery, something like that, have a nice dinner, take in a show maybe at the Lyric. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll spend nicely there in Oxford. You know, for me, I'm interested in terms of the dynamic of how the game is administered by Pete Golding.
Yeah.
And with an emphasis on fourth down as much as anything, because we know Lane had no problem even from inside his own 30.
No, absolutely not.
Fourth and four, letting it rip from deep in his own end. What about Pete Golding in those situations, especially as a defensive guy? How do you anticipate that working? I think that's one of the mysteries. Now, Tulane, who knows, may not be able to put Ole Miss in some situations as much where it's on Golding as the game manager for this team to make those kind of calls. Now, you get to Georgia potentially in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you start to see more of that, I guess.
This is kind of a warm up for for Georgia, or to play Georgia. Ole Miss beat Tulane, as Travis mentioned, 45-10. That was in September. How much have they improved? And look, to your point, and again, we'll discuss this more in the off season, but it really makes you wonder: is a day coming? Now, the NFL really doesn't deal with stuff like this during the season. I know we don't necessarily want college football to become the NFL, but there's some things that the NFL, college football, could really learn from. And one of them is dealing with their coaches and the staff after the season is over and how they're able to do that. So kind of a warm-up game, we think, for Ole Miss. They haven't played in a while. Would be fascinating. I mean, look, Tulane's kind of the same way, aren't they, Trav, as far as coaches in transition along that way? I mean, I think Ole Miss wins. I think they win comfortably. I don't know if it would be 45-10. But when you think about having this game, a playoff game in Oxford, and the how good we think this team could be, even though the Ole Miss quarterback, by the way, may not be coming back, which is another interesting little scenario with this game. So all in all, and I know television is hoping it stays close for a while.
Yeah, TNT, this is the first of the two games on TNT Saturday. This one follows the game we're going to talk about next in Miami, traveling to Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. You know, Trinidad Chambliss lit up Tulane first time around. Now, I would say at that point, he was much more of an unknown than he is now. How much more of an understanding that Tulane has of him at this point compared to what it knew of Trinidad Chambliss back around the first month of the season? We'll see. But I just think that quarterback running back dynamic of Chambliss and Kewan Lacy can be pretty difficult to deal with. As you said, this should be a warm-up for Ole Miss. This should be an opportunity with a new voice at the head coach position to develop some familiarity in that regard before you really get into the deeper end of the pool in this college football playoff. I would almost go to say that Ole Miss, with the situation being what it is benefiting from playing a first round game.
Yeah, I would agree.
Instead of this maybe being Georgia playing Tulane and then mm-hmm. Ole Miss waiting on the winner in New Orleans, and okay, we're going to go into Pete Golding's first game, and it's Kirby Smart and the Georgia damn Bulldogs.
Yeah,
I think this could work out. Now, injuries, you can lose guys in games like this. There could be a price to pay, but if Ole Miss gets through this thing like most people think they will and healthy, and you get Pete Golding through that first game as head coach, I think that could be of a benefit to the Rebels. Speaking of that first game on Saturday involving Southeastern Conference, a football team in Texas A&M, Miami travels to Texas A&M. Carson Beck never would have played at Texas A&M if he had stayed at Georgia. Think about that. He had to transfer to Miami.
Right.
He had to transfer to Miami to play a road game mm-hmm. at Texas A&M because, as we know,
indulge in holiday cravings with the nutrition you need from Cachava's All-in-One Whole Body Shake. It's 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Savor the season knowing you're getting the good stuff your body craves. With Cachava, you're getting the highest quality ingredients. No fillers, no nonsense. Holiday nutrition has never been this easy or delicious. Go to Cachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, and use code NEWS for 15% off.
Georgia doesn't play on the road at Texas A&M from the SEC perspective. In all seriousness, this should be a fun one, too. We talked about this a little bit last week in terms of what you anticipate in terms of potential collisions with these lines of scrimmage. The Texas A&M run game, I kind of keep going back to, but I don't think that's going to be easy against this Miami defense.
No, I would agree with that totally. Trav, I'm just wondering here, could A&M be a little too high for the first quarter in this game? Having this game at home, having the circumstances around it, knowing if they win, they continue on. I think that's fascinating, and I wonder if that will affect them at all in the first quarter. Frankly, you've got kind of a similar situation here with Colin Klein is doing double duty, going to be beginning a head coach at Kansas State, still dealing with A&M. Trev, I wonder if you put together all the bowl games, how many coaches are basically doing the same thing? It kind of goes back to what we said about the NFL and in regards to what people think about the NFL. There are some things they really do probably rather correctly and dealing with these coaching situations later on in the season is one of the good things. So I'm not saying these guys aren't used to it. They can't do double duty, but – man alive, the pressure on you for dealing with that, it's got to be immense.
It does. And I guess when you think about the four SEC teams in action this weekend, mm-hmm. three are for sure dealing with it.
Yeah. Really.
When you talk about Alabama, with Jamarcus Shepherd, wide receiver coach, taking over as the head coach at Oregon State, I don't think Oklahoma, off the top of my head, mm-hmm. has that issue.
No, I don't right think so
now,
either.
But certainly Ole Miss does, as we know. And, Texas A&M, as you talked about with Colin Klein, the offensive coordinator taking over at his alma mater there in Manhattan, Kansas. I'll tell you something that could be problematic for Texas A&M from the outset of this game is defensively for Miami, Reuben Bain.
Yes.
And Akeem Messidor, those two edge guys.
Yeah.
You better account for those two because they can blow things up and, they can cause you some serious problems for that Miami defense. And, it's not just the edge guys either. When I think about Miami up front, you got a guy in Keontae Scott, who's actually a defensive back. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit of a question mark, I think, from a health perspective going into this game. He's listed as probable, which is good news for Miami, but he's kind of a do-it-all playmaker on the back end of that Miami defense. So, you know, having him available obviously would be a big, big thing for the Miami Hurricanes.
Yeah, and Trev, let me throw this out too. Now, look, A&M had a gaudy record. They earned it, and they led the nation in sacks per game, second in tackles for loss, 19th in total defense. But look, you and I have looked at that A&M schedule, and this has been brought out a few times. Has A&M played enough people that's going to prepare them for the playoffs? Because by hook or crook, they had a situation where they didn't exactly play the toughest schedule in the nation, Trav. I'm just wondering if that catches up with them somehow in the playoffs.
You know, and you think about that defense, and it's been a really good defense.
Yeah,
under Mike Elko this season. But they've given it up on the ground down the stretch.
Yes.
You know, Missouri, I think 200-plus rushing yards against A&M. You also had the last time out, Texas, in the second half of that win over the Aggies, just went to town on the ground. So, you know, those are things that you want to see A&M kind of answer. The only thing is, I'm not sure Miami – can make it hurt in that area.
Right. You know, right.
Mark Fletcher, Shamar Brown, you know, decent backs. But, you know, when I think about the real playmakers for Miami, it starts with Malachi Toney.
I'll
be fascinated to see the different ways Miami gets him involved offensively. For a true freshman, he is beyond his years in terms of how he can impact the game. Not the biggest guy in the world. Kind of reminds me a little bit of he's 5'11", 190 pounds, so he's not small, which speaks to his ability in some different ways. You can line him up in the backfield. How does Miami account for Malachi, Texas A&M account for Malachi Toney? I think that's a big part of this game, too.
Yeah, and they've got an A&M veteran secondary is going to be important, too. And look, this Miami passing game, how are they going to react with this? This is a fascinating game. I know A&M wanted the game at night. They've got it kind of as a nooner at this point. So this will be really the most, I think, anticipated game, maybe even of the weekend in some ways.
Yeah, and what's the trust level of these two quarterbacks in this situation? I mean, Carson Beck.
Right.
He's a fifth-year guy. I mean, it should be high for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in playing some really good football.
Yep.
He absolutely does. Right. You know, after that four-interception performance and the loss to Louisville, that seemingly at the time put a big dent in the Hurricanes' college football playoff hopes. It was just a dent. SMU, a few weeks later, seemed to end it, but it did not, as we know now. Two more interceptions against SMU for Carson Beck in that game. So in the two losses this season for Miami, six interceptions for Carson Beck. He's thrown 10 on the season. But, you know, these last three games, NC State, at Virginia Tech, at Pitt, it's 10 touchdown passes in his last three games against just one pick. Now, back to your point, ACC competition. Played pretty good football in the season opener against Notre Dame. I just don't think either one of these teams, though, want to put too much on the quarterback position on Saturday afternoon. And that goes back to the Texas A&M run game, too, as we talk about that. And Le'Veon Moss, one of those backs for Texas A&M, I see here on this injury report. But this is an area in that backfield where A&M has some really nice depth.
Yeah, you know, one quick thing, A&M expected to promote Lyle Hemphill, the D coordinator, replacing Jay Bateman. But, Trev, I think A&M is one of these teams that's more in theory. By the way, I think that they've got a situation here to where the D coordinator is a head coach. Would I be wrong with that, Trev?
Yeah, you know, you kind of get that sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's Elko's baby on the defensive side of the ball. Two retro kind of guys with Mario and
That's
Elko.
Right.
on Saturday afternoon in College Station. Again, if you like collisions, you like line of scrimmage football, I think of the four games on Saturday, at least two of them, really the first two, Alabama, Oklahoma, and then also Miami, Texas A&M have a chance to be those grinders. I'm going to go with Texas A&M to win.
Yeah,
I'm going with that as much as A&M has the home game. If the game was in Miami Gardens, I'd probably go with Miami, but I'm going to stick with the Aggies at home. How about you?
Yeah, I would agree with that too, frankly. I mean, and to me, Trav, would we be mistaken to say that A&M could, in a grinder, A&M has the running game in order to control it at some point? Is that a, I mean, they've certainly gotten some speed on the outside, but if they need to get some first downs, I think that's very possible. And look, Marcel Reed can be a load too. So
that could be the X factor in the game is Reed's legs.
Yes.
Beck's not going to present that issue to the Texas A&M defense. That's where you have concerns for Miami in this game is that A&M's pressure, you know, if Cassius Howell and the rest of those guys get it going and Carson's shown in the past, you can get in his head a little bit, and Elko and kind of like Venables, I think when you talk about Mike Elko and his ability to switch up the picture and, show pressure, get out of it, disguise pressure, bring it from places you're not anticipating. I think for Carson Beck, if that starts early on Saturday, that's a real problem for the Hurricanes. Yeah. But that run game for Texas A&M, we think even if Le'Veon Moss is limited or really doesn't play at all, you're still talking about Reuben Owens. You're still talking about Amari Daniels. You're still talking about E.J. Smith, son of Emmett. You're still talking about the true freshman Morrow. So still a lot of quality options. You know, we talk about Miami not being sure based on Miami being an ACC team. We talked about it many times with A&M, and it's been heavily documented. A&M didn't exactly travel the toughest gauntlet in the SEC to get to this point. So, it kind of works both ways. We're still trying to figure out exactly what we know about Texas A&M. We thought A&M's offensive line was, by the end of the season, one of the best in the SEC. Well, we're going to find out on Saturday with the challenges we talked about that A&M's going to get from Miami up front. We both like A&M in the game.
Yes.
So we're going from Saturday back to Friday night. Tomorrow night, Norman, Oklahoma, the Sooners of OU hosting the Alabama Crimson Tide. Last week when we talked, Brent, that 1.5 was on the other side with Alabama. That's right.
Oh, yes.
Wondered as we move through the week if that late money might not show up more and more for Oklahoma. That appears to be the case here in the last 24 hours or so. Now, it's interesting because the narrative is the recency bias leads us to think, boy, Alabama's the team trending in absolutely the wrong direction after that performance against the Georgia Bulldogs last Saturday in Atlanta. Georgia absolutely dominates the Crimson Tide in the SEC championship game. Meanwhile, OU, from the safety of the couch, doesn't have to worry about that type of situation.
No.
But then when we think about OU to end the regular season, Sooners didn't exactly sprint through the line, after beating Alabama. 17 points against Missouri, 17 points against LSU. Harrowing win over LSU. We talk about this being the first round of the playoff. It feels like OU, though, has been in a playoff since early November when they went to Tennessee and won. They had to win at Tennessee. They had to win at Alabama. They had to beat Missouri. They had to beat LSU. And whether it's looked pretty or not, the Sooners did just that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Fascinating game. home game for the Sooners. The weather's supposed to be nice. I believe it may get down to the 50s or so, but you know, regardless of that, I think that it will be fine. Trav, I wonder what kind of season would OU have had if they have a healthy quarterback throughout the whole year?
It's a legitimate question. I don't know if John Mateer was a Heisman finalist regardless.
Yeah, I agree.
I just don't know if in terms of the passing game, there was going to be this consistent level of prolific play, not just where he's concerned, just in terms of how, you know, OU's built. Now, Satania has been outstanding.
Yes. Yeah.
And you think about the OU passing game, mm-hmm. you know, last year, you know, this OU passing game in comparison looks like, you know, 84 BYU with Steve Young under Lavelle Edwards. Yeah. I know I'm dating myself there, but that one's for the old heads who stayed until 9:30 Eastern to join us here live on Ryer on YouTube. No, I do think he aligns with sort of the identity of this OU team. I think he's a tough dude. I don't think there's any question of that. You know, I think playing through the thumb stuff that we've heard mm-hmm. Brent Venables talk about here in the last couple of days, it's still an issue, at least from a pain tolerance perspective. He's still dealing with some stuff where that thumb is concerned. And, you know, I think that's where it goes back to this Alabama defense.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
That's tomorrow night. You've got to make John Mateer and the OU passing game beat you. And I'm not talking about, you know, the quick game and the throws to the perimeter and things like that. To me, that's right in there with the run game for OU, with Robinson and Mateer and what he's able to do. You got to kind of lump that all in together and say, we're going to take away the quick game. We're going to be physical on the outside. We're going to play it with good technique. What you want to do is make Mateer have to sit in there and beat you throwing the football down the field. Now, he did it to LSU. LSU busted a coverage. Satania somehow gets deep, gets behind the secondary, and, you know, that was as big a play for OU as the pick six was against Alabama about a month ago or so.
Yeah, I agree. And and for Alabama, there are a lot of things swirling around. I mean, even though Kalen DeBoer came out earlier in the week and say he's happy in Tuscaloosa, he's not going anywhere, that narrative still continues, maybe more media-driven now than it is anything else.
And is that more national media-driven, would you say? Because I don't know anyone on the beat that I would consider – reputable at this point that is kind of indicated to me there might be more smoke, and who knows, there might be but has that been more of a national thing you think
with Kevin? I think it has to be. I would agree with that. I mean, if some of the guys that cover Alabama football on a regular basis had come out and said that, I think it would give it more credence. But and it may just be the TV thing to do right now, Trav.
First,
to do that. But on a more positive note, I think what is humongous for Alabama is Josh Quavis, the tight end, being available, and what his presence does over the middle and getting some of the we know what these wide receivers can do. But you've got to have at least one guy, if not two, on Quavis at this point, the way he's played and how he's matured during the year. I think that's humongous for Alabama.
I think Quavis for Alabama early in the game and R. Mason Thomas for Oklahoma early in the game, because R. Mason Thomas isn't anywhere on OU's availability report, which tells you he's cleared and going to play in the game. Quavis is still on the report. Now, yeah. Tonight, he's listed as probable, which tells me he's going to give it a go.
Yeah.
Now, there's a difference between being available and being 50, 60 plus snaps.
True.
Yes. Available. I want to see early in the game exactly what Quavis looks like. Yeah. And how quickly in the game does Ryan Grubb dial him up?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it more of a situation where throughout the week, the narrative has been more and more positive? Although in terms of practice footage or, you know, what you hear from people covering the team or read from people covering Alabama on a daily basis, he's on an exercise bike a couple of days ago while the media is out there.
Mm-hmm.
I need to see it tomorrow night from Josh Quavis early in the game. Yeah. And the thing about R. Mason Thomas is that on Monday, you saw footage out of Norman of him going through actual drill work and not just stretch or flex.
Yeah.
He was working pass rush drills against resistance, which, you know, I take that as even if it's 25, 30 snaps for him in this game tomorrow night, he's going to be able to give OU something situationally.
Sure.
Perhaps.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
I still, you know, the cynic in me still thinks Quavis, I just got to see more from him. Jam Miller also going to be able to go in this game.
Yeah. And obviously LT Overton's not. That's a real shame because he could have made a real difference. But look, you know, as you see this game, I mean, what is Alabama going to do? Will they be able to run the ball some? They've struggled against Auburn. They struggled certainly in the SEC championship game with Georgia. You know, the thing I like about Miller, Jim Miller, as much as his running ability, I think his blocking ability and to keep people off Ty Simpson is extremely important. And how will Ty Simpson do if they can't run the ball? How far would they be able to get the ball down the field? Look, Oklahoma will get all the, or at least the majority of the attention with their defense. But I tell you, Trav, and you said that early on, what this Bama defense is able to do was shaped this year. And frankly, their defense is the reason they're in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's been more of the positive for the Alabama defense. You talk about scoring defense. I think Oklahoma's giving up a little bit fewer than 14 points per game coming into this one. Mm-hmm. Alabama around 17 points.
Yeah.
I think it could be a 17-14 kind of game.
Yeah.
Because of, in large part, you know, these two defenses. And Alabama, the first time around, red zone defense, they did a pretty good job, you know, at getting Oklahoma off the field, forcing some field goals. Now, you know, Tate Sandell, that's a possible difference maker for OU for sure. I mean, he's a Luke Groza Award winner. Will Riker doesn't kick in Tuscaloosa anymore.
No.
Kicks for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah.
So that takes us back to special teams, which there was so much made of the three turnovers by Alabama or the takeaways by OU, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah.
In that first matchup. But Alabama got pretty well boat raced in special teams too.
They gave up
a punt return, missed a field goal right before the half. I know it was tipped, whatever. That ball was going dead left off Connor Tully's.
No doubt.
Very makeable opportunity. You start adding those type of things up, those yards up, and that's where the game, as much as anything, was determined too. So Alabama can't afford to get just hammered in special teams. Kind of happened again against Georgia in Atlanta. That can't happen.
No.
Tomorrow night. And so, you know, I think for Alabama offensively, early downs, I don't care how they go about it, but they can't live in second and 10, second and 12.
No, absolutely.
They can't live there. And they did a pretty good job the first time around with Daniel Hill of avoiding that. Mm-hmm. You know, they stayed ahead of schedule. The negative plays weren't really as much of a problem. The sacks, it ended up being a problem. Not all of those, I think, were on the protection. I think there was a point in that second half where Simpson was a little bit, if not more, rat trap. So early downs, and don't try to get too exotic with the runs. You know, you got a 240-pound back in Daniel Hill.
Right.
You know, Jam Miller isn't, you know, a dynamic guy. You know, stick with direct runs, inside zone, duo, those type of things. And if you do that well enough, then you can create some play action shots off of those, and you can help your quarterback more than they've done over the second half of the season.
And I think, Trav, something needs to be said about the offensive line. Now, look, this line is not where Kalen DeBoer wants it. I think we know that. It will be next September before it's a little bit more where that is. But the big thing here is their play tomorrow night is going to be crucial as far as giving Ty Simpson protection, and keeping his confidence up, being able to at least run the ball for 75 to 100 yards. Maybe with Quavis back, that's going to help them some with that too. But Travi, isn't there a lot on this Bama offensive line going into tomorrow night?
Yeah, there has to be. I mean, it's not just R. Mason Thomas that you have to concern yourself with. Taylor Wine is a problem. He can get after the quarterback. It's a disruptive defense. There's no doubt about it. I know CC, one of our viewers here, chiming in, says Alabama rushed the ball pretty well against Auburn in the regular season finale. They did, by Alabama 2025 standards.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ty Simpson was a part of that. You know, so are we going to see some more design quarterback runs for Ty Simpson tomorrow night? Are the things that we've heard in recent weeks about his health going to be an issue in terms – there's no tomorrow. You know, there was it felt like Alabama called that game against Auburn like it was a playoff game.
Yes.
Whereas it didn't feel that way as much. It didn't feel like they were going to expose Ty Simpson to as much. They ended up doing it anyway because they couldn't run the ball. So had to throw it 39 times, and there were more dropbacks than that. So that was a problem for him in terms of the pass rush that he ended up facing. But I don't think they can just line up and run for 150 plus against this Oklahoma defense. But last time around, they ran for 80 before, you know, that was after sacks were taken out.
I've said
this before about scrimmage yards. Daniel Hill in that game had roughly 100 scrimmage yards and a couple of touchdowns. And their red zone offense was good.
So if
you can take care of the football, not get crushed in special teams, and kind of replicate some of the other areas, I think Alabama has a really good shot to win this game. That being said, who do you like in the game, Brent?
Well, I go back and forth, frankly. I think Bama wins if they can cut the turnover situation down to one or less. I think that would be huge for them. But look, I mean, at some point, some of these guys really have got to step up. I mean, the blocking is going to be huge, and again. They struggle in punt returns, kickoff returns in this game earlier. And I think what is huge is, and this reminds me a little bit of A&M and Miami situation, and Bama's got to be careful about this, Trav. They can't fall behind, I don't think, 7-10 to nothing by the end of the first quarter in playing catch up for most of the game.
No, because I think if they fall behind 10 or 14 early, you question the psyche of of that football team after what just happened in Atlanta, and especially with this being on the road. Very tough for me to pick Alabama in this game.
Yeah, I agree.
A team that feels like there are just so many questions right now in areas that we just outlined. Large part, again, kind of overlooked in all this is that OU didn't enter the postseason as a juggernaut. You know, Missouri got the job done at home. LSU fortunate to win that game. So I don't want to overvalue Oklahoma. I guess I'm going on the belief that I trust OU in terms of knowing more about who it is right now.
It's
not pretty, but they know they're going to play the hell out of some defense.
And sure
they're going to kick the football really well, and they're going to return the football.
Yes.
And they saw you get a punt blocked against Georgia. So you can probably anticipate a house rush early in the game tomorrow night to get after Blake Dowd, the Alabama punter. So I'm picking OU. I think it'll be a grinder. I think it'll probably be something like 20-17.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yes.
If it gets north of that, you know, it gets into the mid-20s or, and I'm not talking about the weather. I'm talking about, on the scoreboard, you get into the mid-upper 20s, low 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably a good sign for Alabama that they've taken care of the ball. They haven't gotten crushed in special teams. And they hit on some of those things that they had success with offensively the first time around.
And Trev, is this a game where if he has his head on straight, what could Ryan Williams do for Alabama in this game? I mean, if he has, if he has six catches for what, 85, 90 yards, that'd be humongous for them, would it not?
Well, and that goes back to Josh Cuevas and what his true availability is, because if this week has been more about gamesmanship in terms of what he's going to be able to provide and maybe what you're trying to get this OU staff thinking about or preparing for that you're not really going to put out there. And I do think he'll be out there.
Yeah.
But is he going to catch six balls for 80 and a touchdown like he did the first time around? I'm not betting on that if I'm an Alabama fan.
No.
Ryan Williams, Jeremy Bernard, Lottie Brooks, Isaiah Horton, Rico Scott, go down the list. Those yards have got to come from somewhere.
They sure do.
I think early in the game, even if you have to keep eight in and protect, keep eight in and protect.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
And take a shot. And that's easier said than done, because something else I think Oklahoma does a good job of is they give you those looks of here it comes.
Yeah.
Man free on the outside. And mugging it up in the A gaps with the linebackers, and then they get out of it. Next thing you know, you're throwing a deep ball into cover three, or something like that, and you're getting it picked. But regardless, I still think you have to take a shot early, because OU played downhill against the pass the last time.
They did.
You know, a lot of that game. The pick six, I mean, that's a safety just playing downhill and squeezing the field there in the middle. And that's another problem for Alabama. The middle of the field's been its bread and butter. When things have been good for Ty Simpson, we've seen more and more defenses play middle of the field coverage and say, look, if you want to beat us outside the numbers, you want to beat us on, you know, deep corner routes, things like that, let's see you do it. But you're not hitting that 18-yard dig right in the middle of the field that they had so much success with in the first six or seven games of the season. So there you go. There's your picks for Brent and myself, were the three games involving SEC teams this weekend in the college football playoff are concerned. That's not the only newsworthy stuff, Brent, that's been going on with SEC football. Transfer portal.
Ooh, man.
And some quarterback action.
Yes.
Where the SEC is concerned. How surprised were you about DJ Lagway in that move that he's made to go into the portal and it looks like move on from the University of Florida?
I think somewhat. A lot of it was – I mean, he was hurt most of the year, gained too much weight, was not mobile like he needed to be, which was a problem. I mean, they've had several players enter the portal so far. Now, look, all these players aren't great players by any stretch of the imagination. Some of them are kind of on the cusp. Now, Jaden Baugh, Travis, one then I'm interested in to see where he goes or does he stay. Mm-hmm. Texas, Georgia, Ohio State have certainly shown some interest in him. Pup Howard, who actually played in Jacksonville, looks like he is going also. I am intrigued by some of these coaching hires for whatever reason. Florida's had a run on Georgia Tech coaches, which this is one of the few years Georgia Tech, and I give that group a lot of credit. But, Trev, my main question right now is, can they keep Jaden Ball? If they could do that would be humongous for them.
Yeah, that's the one I need to know, you know, is more than anybody else, really. I know Ernest Graham, or Miles Graham, I guess it is, son of Ernest, right? The linebacker for Florida is going to come back. Mm-hmm. I need to know about Jaden Ball. He's one of my top three or four favorite players in all of college football. And you outlined some of the potential suitors, essentially whoever can write a check. And then they all three can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not like it will be totally, if he does hit the portal, will it be all about money? No, because the opportunities he'll have will all be lucrative with also a chance to win a national championship. And also, you know, to your point about the Tech perspective, it looks like the Tech quarterback, Aaron Filo, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Entering the transfer portal, mm-hmm. and maybe he's going to follow Buster Faulkner to Gainesville, the new Florida offensive coordinator. Bo Prabula out at Missouri, news of him hitting the portal. That makes me think, and I don't know if Missouri has a younger quarterback. I didn't think they – well, yeah, they do. I mean, they played the kid this season because Prabula was out. Do you think Zollers, his presence, has something with Prabula looking to move on?
Maybe
they've decided, look, this is where we're going to go with the young guy. Or could – you know, we've seen Drink go that route in the portal himself. Do you think that – that they could have another guy lined up in that regard?
Yeah, they very well could. That's a real possibility. I mean, I still give them a lot of credit. Drink's going to stay. And for you and me, if people want to see Missouri, they can see them here in Jacksonville in the
the ACC runner-up, Virginia Cavaliers, right?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. An 8-4, 4-4 mark in the SEC. Now they didn't win any championships. I mean, that's not a bad year. We've certainly seen worse, haven't we, at Missouri, Trav? But next year will be interesting. But Drink seems to have kind of turned this program in a positive way from when it started, when he first got there.
Yeah, he has. And we've said it before. Drink's going to beat the teams that Drink needs to beat on an annual basis. Yeah. It's going to continue to be more about, can he start beating some top 10 teams?
Sure.
Can he be a little bit better than 1-10, 1-11 against, the better teams that we see on the Missouri schedule? Brent, you got anything else for us before we get out of here?
Trav, I think the two of the bigger hires would be Kendall Briles, the OC at South Carolina, replacing Mike Shula. And to me, by far, the biggest hire of the offseason at this point is Jim Knowles, the D coordinator at Tennessee. Knowles, how can I say this, Trav? Knowles is not fancy. He knows who he is. No one's going to tell him anything different. But I tell you what, Duke, Oklahoma State, Ohio State, briefly at Penn State. When this guy's got it going, you'll see a major difference in Tennessee's defense.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption there. And we've seen some movement around the league. What about Will Muschamp headed to Texas?
Really.
As the next defensive coordinator. I think that was surprising on a couple levels because I don't think a lot of folks anticipated a change on the defensive side for Steve Sarkisian. And then, you know, here comes Will Muschamp, who I believe his son is a quarterback, or one of his sons is a quarterback at Vanderbilt. I wonder if he's going to follow Will. Out to Austin, maybe. Who knows? But that one certainly made a few ripples around the SEC earlier today with Muschamp back in the SEC on a full-time basis.
And by the way, Trav, for Texas and Michigan, will there be any calling of the action on the field, or will it be all off the field stuff?
Lord, it's really? Yeah.
Man, love.
That will be one of the non-CFP bowl games I make sure to to sort of tune in for. And no surprise, Arch Manning going to be back in 2026 behind center for Sark. And the and Bryce Underwood ought to be interesting for Michigan in that game.
Really will.
The young quarterback. You're going to have some quarterback star power in a non-college football playoff bowl game.
Probably safe to say, Trav, that that Arch will not. I'm being facetious here. He'll make really good money in the NFL. It may not be much more than he makes at college.
I would think, you know, not that Arch is in. You know, he's not delivering newspapers.
No, he's not, is he?
there really aren't newspapers anymore to deliver. But you get my. You're not delivering pizzas, or he's not driving. He's not dashing, as the kids call it. I got to think Texas is going to make sure he's not riding a scooter. Okay. The class is there.
No. And two last couple things. I was curious about this. When will we see two open dates like we did this year? Well, that won't happen to 2030 and 2031. Wow. So, I mean, Trav, and this is more on another day.
Nine game SEC schedule.
Look, you're not playing the Sisters of the Poor the third game of the year in November or starting the season necessarily. So how brutal is that going to be in a, and by the way,
it's going to make it harder on the teams that it's going to make it even harder on the teams that can't put together the kind of roster that the top five or six teams.
Oh yeah.
Because they're not going to have that extra week to recover.
Yeah.
You know, some of these teams, they go on these gauntlets, Arkansas, you know, even Missouri, that's not good news for, I don't think. You know, we've had that double bye week a couple of times here in recent years. Yeah. It's kind of been, you know, it kind of got to the point where I think people thought this was going to be an annual thing, but it's just had more to do with how the calendar laid out, right?
Yeah. So that's exactly what happens with that. And speaking of that, I know we got a ways off to this, but oh man, will there be some? Will the commissioner talk to the coaches, Trav, about not criticizing the schedule when they're up before the media? Because look, you and I understand coaches, and I know they appreciate the extra money and all that goes with it. But Trav, you know good well, like I do, that they're not happy with this extra game, are they?
No. And you know, if Georgia, Alabama, Texas aren't happy with it, Oklahoma, what do you think Mississippi State Arkansas? Ooh,
really?
Think about that extra SEC game. Selfishly, as fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, we don't mind it all that much. We don't have to go through it, though. No doubt about it.
Trav, before we go, we got to have a Pops report. Things I know we're getting toward his favorite time of year. Gift ideas for Nana, beyond maybe a candy bar.
Yeah. You know, I think we finally shamed him out of his Skittles era where he would give Nana a bag of Skittles for a holiday or
right.
He turned 78 years old tomorrow.
No.
Yep. Oh, my. Birthday. Birthday for Pops tomorrow. Ooh. 78 big ones. He'll tell you. You ask him about turning 78, he'll tell you, I can't believe it. He said many times he thought he'd be dead long ago, and he thought it probably would have ended in some type of dispute, you know, with him. So he's just as sort of shocked about turning 78 tomorrow as any of us are, but he's doing well. You know, he's hanging in there, and yard looks good. That's what he really cares about. His yard, and you know, he likes that tomato sandwich for lunch.
Yeah,
with a little bit of mayo and a lot of black pepper on that tomato sandwich. That's what he likes. White bread.
Now, is it before he goes in to watch Gunsmoke? could he be in the yard as we speak, Trav, watering the grass? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, he's a big sort of. I call him he's kind of a bootleg waterer. You know, he's kind of an outlaw waterer. He'll get out there in the middle of the night, get that extra water on that grass. Which I've heard it's not the best thing to water your grass at night. It creates some type of mildew or something that's not good for whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm a green thumb or something, but there's a good chance he's out there right now. And you're right. He'll go back in, he'll throw it on TV land or something, and he'll watch Hoss and Gunsmoke or one of those anyway. One of the shoot 'em ups. He likes the shoot 'em ups.
Yes, he does.
Well, all right, Brent, a lot of fun. Look forward to all the action coming up this weekend, and we'll certainly be back next week to recap and look ahead to what's next for SEC teams in the college football playoff.
Trav, enjoy it, my friend. We will look forward to next time. And an early, it's hard to believe it's here, but we're a week away from Christmas Day, brother. So it's around the corner.
Yep. And so with that, for Brent Beard, I'm Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us right here on Ryer on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. Thumbs up for the show would help us out tremendously as well. For Brent, Travis, until next time. So long, everybody.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.